Welcome to Storytelling, the art of delighting your audience. Thank you very much for coming for this presentation. I am Esther de Nicolás. I'm the team manager for Spain. But besides being a team manager, I'm many other things, like many of us. I'm an amateur pianist. I'm also a manga drawer, a manga artist, as you can see below. And I'm also a proud geek. And to be honest, when I think 20 years ago, I would have never imagined in my whole life that I would be up in a stage speaking to people like you about storytelling. Never in my life. I was probably the shyest girl in the world. Well, not sure if in the world, but in Spain, I was probably in the top five. And in the Canary Islands, where I'm originally from, I'm quite sure, I'm pretty sure that I was the shyest girl in Tenerife. So what brought me here? What was my journey? Why did I come to be talking about storytelling, evangelizing audiences, when I wasn't even able to call to ask for a pizza when I was 13? So it has been a journey, but it all started when I realized that if I wanted to make an impact in the world, if I wanted to be heard, if I wanted to raise my voice, I needed to have storytelling skills. Because if not, no one else would ever hear me out. And I needed to be heard. Because I was very shy, but I had a lot of things going on in my mind. I was a very creative girl, and I needed to let that out. And the only way was to learn how to let it out. So I'm here to tell you about how I managed to do that, and hopefully inspire you and teach you some tips and tricks which allowed me to actually become a better storyteller. So there are three key things when you're talking about storytelling. The first one is, of course, the story. There are lots of ways to tell a story, and I'm going to share with you some of the, let's say, archetypes that usually work for films, video games, and other kind of storytelling activities, and that you can implement in your presentation. And I'm going to share some tips on how I use them and on which kind of messages I like to convey using these kind of stories. The second thing is your gestures, your body, how you use your body to actually talk to an audience. And I know that you're all very experienced presenters, so really, I mean, there's nothing that I can teach you about that, but I'm going to tell you what I think about this kind of tips that usually coaches give, like, you know, show the palm of your hands, move around the scenario, you know, these kind of things that usually you hear about. What I think about them and how I have implemented them in my storytelling. And the third one is your voice. I was a piano player, and I also was a singer, so I took a lot of vocal classes, and I learned a lot of cool tips and tricks to make your voice more powerful, prevent trembling. So whether you believe it or not, I'm nervous and I'm anxious speaking with you, but I can manage that trembling, and I can manage that anxiousness, and I can avoid it taking control of how I'm sounding to you or how am I showing up to you. So I'm going to share some of that. So it's going to be a very practical session. Probably I will ask you to stand up and do some exercises with me. So bear with it, okay? It's going to be fun. So, no, don't laugh. It's going to be fun. So, first thing, your story. So what's the story you want to tell to your audience? And what's more important? Why is that story important to you? What's the key takeaway that you want people to have when they leave the room? Try to have just one key takeaway, maximum three. If you try to tell a lot of things to people, it's going to be hard for them to remember all the different things that you're trying to tell. So try to choose one to three things and focus everything on that. Honestly, when I think about most of the technical talks that I attend to, they follow this pattern, right? So here's a problem, and this is a solution. And you know, in the middle, you have some coding, you have some snapshots, but pretty much that's the scheme of the presentation. And it works for technical audiences, but let's face it, it's not the most exciting presentations, right? So what can we do to make it more exciting? Well, let's use some drama. So why were you interested in that problem in the first place? Were you faced with a challenge in your business? What was the challenge? Was someone going to get fired if they didn't manage to solve it? How many sleepless nights you spend figuring out how to solve that? So these are the kind of things that you need to add to your story to make it appealing. Tell us the journey of how you discovered that technology, how you managed to apply that to your specific problem, and spice it up with all the people around you that supported you, with all the things that you had to solve, that you had to face. This is what makes a story interesting. This is what makes people thrive with your story. So make sure that you add this kind of spices. And this is like the simplest way to tell a story. So let's discuss some more, let's say, advanced ways to tell your story. First, there's the monomyth. That's the hero's journey. It's the typical, a lot of movies and a lot of video games follow this pattern, this story pattern. It's very, you know, it's very inspiring. So you have this normal person that one day hits a calling for whatever reason. In films, it's usually super dramatic. Someone dies, and then you need to go on a journey and grow and face the unknown, and then you come back to where you were in the beginning, but you're completely different, and you can save the world. So a lot of stories go like this. One of my favorite ones is Star Wars. I told you I'm a geek. So you can use this kind of storytelling to discuss technical problems. You know, make the hero your product. Make your customer the hero. Make yourself the hero. This is something that you can use, for example, when you go into a presentation and you need to discuss your own journey. Like, for example, I was 2 weeks ago delivering a presentation to the high school where I graduated. And this is the kind of story that I told them. So I started, when I left high school, I told them what had been my journey through all these years. And then I went back to that high school, and how was I there, sitting there at the moment, talking to those children. Well, not children, they're high school, sorry about that. If there are any high schoolers listening, you're not children, you're super adults. So this is the kind of story that you can think. You can also, for example, another good hero journey would be the transition from BPOS to Office 365. And I can see that some of you here worked on that. BPOS was this kind of product that suddenly faced a massive transformation. And how we managed to implement that transformation, to migrate all those customers, to give all that feedback to engineering, and that became Office 365, which is a major product in Microsoft. This is the kind of hero journey that you can tell to your audiences. Another very nice storytelling is nested loops. So nested loops, the idea is that you tell stories inside stories, okay? So this is the kind of thing that, for example, when I'm telling you about last night, I can tell you, last night I was going to have some hamburgers, and then I met this amazing guy who told me that he was doing blah, 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 blah. So I'm telling you that meeting story inside a broader story, which was what I was intending to you. You can use this, for example, when you want to refer to mentors that have helped you along the way, where you want to discuss things that you've learned along the way and that might be relevant for that. A good example of nested storytelling is Lost. If you think about Lost, you have the primary story, right, which is the plane crashing and people getting there. I'm not sure, have you all watched Lost? I'm not going to spoil anything, okay? So the central theme of Lost is destiny, right? Or at least that's how I understood it. It was quite cryptic at the end, but the theme is destiny. So the nested stories were the stories of each of the protagonists. And in fact, the storytelling of every chapter went like that. So you started in the island, but then you had this I don't know how to say that in English, the camera approaching the eye of the protagonist, and you could be inside the story of that protagonist. And then it was nested everything inside the overall story arc. This is very powerful as well when you want to for example, if you are explaining your business strategy to an audience. So you have the what is your business doing, then why is your business doing that, and how is your business going to achieve that? That's an example of nested storytelling that can work perfectly to convey your audience how your business is going to be in the next years. Another good example of that is converging ideas. So it's slightly different, because we're not telling a story inside a story, but we're telling separate stories that are equally important, and then they kind of get together and provide provide a conclusion to the conflict, to the initial conflict. So you have an initial conflict, separate stories, equally important, and then a final resolution. And the best example of that is Game of Thrones. So you have this, it really is not a nested story. So you are hearing about Daenerys Targaryen story, you have Jon Snow's story, you have the poor Stark stories, and then you put everything together, right? And then who knows what's going to end like. But this is the idea of the converging ideas storytelling. And you can use that as well in your presentation when you're trying to, for example, explain your audience how you created a company, for example. So how did Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer met each other? There's a different story. Bill Gates has his story, Steve Ballmer has his story, and then at some point they get together and create something. This is a converging idea storytelling. Next one is in medias res. This means that your audience suddenly gets caught in the middle of the action. This is, for example, what happens in a lot of movies when you're suddenly starting in a car crash and there's a lot going on and you don't understand anything, but then then you have flashbacks and flash forwards, and at some point you get to understand this. This is really useful when you want to grab attention from the audience, right? So you want to make people awake all of a sudden. For example, if I had started this presentation saying, I don't know, I could have started saying, I was there standing in front of 800 people in my first presentation ever, and I completely went blank. My new manager was there looking at me, 800 people were judging me, and I didn't know what to say. That was, in fact, my first business presentation, by the way. And it would have been a great example of in medias res. It works great, but be careful, because you need to keep the attention of your audience. So use it only for shorter presentations, okay? Because if not, it's kind of strange for the audience. But it's really good to grab executive attention. For example, if you go to a GM, to Pilar, you met her this morning, and I say, okay, so you remember the deal with Banco Santander? It's not going to happen. In medias res, she will suddenly say, what? Why? And then I get her attention and I can tell her the whole story. So use that for that kind of storytelling, okay? Good news is always it's always better than bad news. A great example of in medias res is one of my favorite video games ever, Monkey Island 2. The best video game ever. Thank you. So you remember this scene? So Guybrush Threepwood is hanging there in a rope, and we don't know anything about what's going on. And then Elaine appears, and Guybrush starts telling her what happened and what course of actions led him to be there, almost losing his life. So this is a great example of immediate storytelling. Then we have false start. False start is where we are starting to tell a story which is kind of people are expecting a story, a journey, a hero journey, or whatever, and then just suddenly stop that story and need to start all over again. So this is great when you are talking about failures. So if you're a startup, for example, and you're talking about how you completely messed up, this is a great way to tell that story. For example, if I'm telling you about this first time that I ever spoke in public, I could have told you, then I went back down the state, and then I went up again and started the presentation again. So I'm going to tell you, in fact, I'm going to tell you a real full start story. So as I told you, I was a piano player, and I was also a piano teacher. So I had this amazing six-year-old student, piano student with me, and this was her first concert ever. So six-year-old, imagine her, poor little girl, the first time that she was going to play in public, her parents were there, like with 40, 50 parents there, and she was completely nervous. She was dying of anxiety, and I was really worried about her, but, you know, music is a tough business, so you know. And then she needed to get out there and do this acting. So she went up there, her hands trembling, and I can tell you that's not good for a piano player. Her hands were completely trembling. She sat down in her piano, breathed hard, started to play. She missed. She went completely blank. She was about to cry. And I was, you know, seeing her from the public, and I couldn't get up and save her. She needed to manage that on her own. So she started again, she failed again. And then she stood up, and I thought that she was going to leave the stage, to be honest. It wouldn't have been the first girl to leave the stage, scared. But then she did something that actually taught me the greatest lesson of fortitude that I've ever seen in my life. Six-year-old girl. She stopped playing, she stood up, looked at the audience and say, "I failed, but I'm going to try again. Please excuse me." And then she sat again and she started playing, and she did it. She finally did it. This is a great example of false start, and also a great example of how to overcome your anxiety. So a good example of this is Gears of War. You know, I told you I'm a geek, so bear with my examples. But if you have played Gears of War, do you remember the story of the first game? So the protagonist had to leave his post to save his father. And that caused him to be imprisoned and for several years until the game starts and you are freed from prison. That's a great false start story. The Count of Monte Cristo is another great false start story. Then we have sparklines. Sparklines means that you are confronting a desired reality with the reality that you have. So this is great for inspiring people. So for example, I could tell you, I dream of a world where 50% of engineers are women, where girls are entitled and empowered to build things, where we see a lot of women delivering technical presentations, where we see a lot of girls choosing STEM careers. But only 10% in Spain of girls are choosing STEM careers. So we need to do something. Right? You feel that? You feel how I'm confronting you to what I would desire to have versus what I do have. This inspires action. This inspires people to follow you. And it's really powerful. And the best examples that I could think of this is Martin Luther King with "I Have a Dream." This is one of the most powerful storytelling techniques that there are. So if you want to really inspire someone, this is a great way to do that. And then we have the petal structure. Well, the petal structure is actually very interesting for events where there are multiple speakers. This means that you have a central theme that you are trying to, a central message that you are trying to transmit to your audience. And then you have different stories which are completely non-related, but they come back to the same central topic, okay? So for example, imagine that I'm doing an Azure community event. So the central topic is how Azure can support your business. And you have different speakers telling different stories, but that they're all connected in this single message. It's great if you have a master of ceremonies that can get up the stage and explain to the audience how this is converging into a single idea. But if not, it's good that every speaker has clarity on what that central idea is, so that all the presentations are linked together. And that's a very easy way to turn, spread presentations into a single storyline event. This is something that when we do events, we should think about that. And there are lots of examples. Pretty much all the events that we do follow this structure. So this is for story. And I haven't spoken about PowerPoint on purpose, because that's a whole other topic. But I'm just going to tell you one thing. Do not abuse PowerPoint. Not. Really, if you want to give notes to the audience, give them notes. But don't put a lot of things to read in the PowerPoint, because people cannot do two things at the same time. Either they read or they listen to you. So what do you prefer? If you want them to read, you can send them to your blog. So just remember, no more than three sentences in a PowerPoint. And try to use images that support what you're trying to tell the audience. Okay? So this is just the only tip that I'm going to give you. Less is more. So second topic, body language. And are we aware of our body language? Are we really aware? And let's go through some of the things that I usually see in presentations. For example, hands in your pockets. So what does this tell about your speaker? Probably you may say that I'm indifferent to you. I'm a rock star that I don't care really about this presentation. I've done hundreds like this. Hands in my pocket. This is what you would feel. Another thing, hey, good morning. I'm really excited to talk with you today. Yeah, super excited, right? So this is also something that, and my favorite one. So I'm speaking, and I'm like this. Have you seen this in a presentation? A lot of times, right? Like, you think, he's going to start dancing, right? So you see this a lot. Because people is not aware of what they're doing, because they're anxious. And that's the key thing here. How can you manage your anxiety? Because there are no tips for body language. It's the way that you are taking that. All these actions that I told you about, even the hands in your pockets, are signs of anxiety. Because everyone feels anxious when they go up on stage, no matter how many times you've gone up on stage. Today, for example, and I've done hundreds of presentations, but today, my PowerPoint wasn't uploaded in the PC. And it created anxiety, because I needed to make you guys wait, upload the presentation, see what was going on. And no matter how many presentations you give, there is always something that can shake you. So how can you manage this? Well, the good news, think about you're not the only one in that. So 85% of public speakers say that they feel anxious when they go up a stage. The 15% are liars. So no matter how experienced you are, you will always feel anxious. What you need to know is that you can recognize that anxiety and use that for your advantage. Anxiety makes you feel more awake. It gives you adrenaline. It makes you more energetic. So recognize that you're feeling anxious and say, okay, this is me feeling anxious. Don't let it escalate. Because people sometimes feel nervous and then say, oh my God, I'm starting to feel anxious. And then it gets worse and worse and worse. Don't let that happen. Okay, so you're nervous. Okay, so what? Everyone is. 85%, the other are liars. So everyone is nervous. Live with it. Use it for your advantage. And the second tip that I'm going to give you is to reframe how we understand public speaking. So this is not a performance. You remember the story I told you before of this girl? She was nervous because she was performing. And when you perform, there's a right and a wrong way to do that. But when you're speaking, there's not. We're having a conversation. There's no way I can be wrong about something. Well, there might be a way. But, you know, I'm talking to you the same way that I would be talking to, I don't know, anyone. And if I feel that I'm having a conversation with you, then my body language supports what I'm saying. I'm not even thinking about what I'm doing with my hands. I'm just speaking to you. I'm trying to make it as close as possible. And if you feel that way, and if you believe for real that you are having this conversation, then you will naturally approach your audience, because I want you to share my passion for storytelling. And that's why I'm going to be close to you. And that's why I'm going to move my hands, supporting my language. And that's why if I'm speaking to you guys, which, by the way, you could have seated here. If I'm speaking to you guys, I will move here, right? If I'm speaking to you, I will move here. And it will come naturally. I'm not even thinking about that. I'm looking at your faces because I care about how you feel. I don't want to bore you. I care about you, so I'm trying to watch all of you. I'm not doing that, you know, like 3 seconds and I'm changing that. You probably have heard about that. So 3 seconds, you change. 3 seconds, you change. Your hands should be like that, okay? So you need to move in a square box. Try not to move too much. This is the kind of things that people tell you. I don't really believe in that. Just think about that you're having a conversation and act the same way that you would be if we were having this conversation one-to-one with a coffee. Try to do that. So I'm going to tell you about an exercise that I learned in acting lessons way back in the day. I was also in the acting school. I've done a lot of cool things in my life. So in the acting school, they told us how to have presence in a scenario. Okay? Remember that I was the shyest girl on earth, so I got involved in acting lessons because really it was ridiculous how shy I was. I wasn't even able to enter into a shop and ask for the price of something. So I told myself, hey, you need to do something about that. So I started going to improvisation classes. And the first thing that they told me, and please get up, do this exercise with me. Thank you. Okay. So, we're going to breathe, okay? Very easy. So, hands up, inhale, exhale. One more time, inhale, exhale. Okay, when you exhale, feel how your shoulders get relaxed. Feel how your legs are aligned to your shoulders. This is the position you want to start with, okay? This is the natural position. You need to do this several times. Are you aware of the concept of personal space? So when we go up in the stage, we feel that our personal space is very, very, very tiny, and that the other people's personal spaces are really flowing us with, and it cannot let us move. So try to imagine a bubble with you, okay? A bubble, which is your physical space, your personal space. And every time that you inhale and exhale, imagine how this is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until your whole room is your personal space. Try to do that before the audience come in. As a tip. So let's do it one more time, just for the sake of it. Inhale. Exhale. Thank you. You may sit down for the moment. So remember, try to envision your personal space. Try to make it grow and occupy the whole room so that you're all in my personal space and I am inviting you to meet me and my real me. So this is, in fact, the best tip that I can give you for body language. Just be yourself. Be yourself. But be yourself in a real way. You're not yourself if you're super anxious. You're not yourself if you are feeling that the audience is your enemy. Just be yourself. Have a conversation with your friends. Because in the community, we're all friends. And this is an easy way to remember that. And let's get to the third piece, which is probably the most overlooked tool that we have when we public speak, which is our voice. There are, you know, a lot of science behind voice. So I'm not going to enter into a lot of detail because that only would be like a 3-hour presentation. But I'm going to show you some things regarding register. So you see that there are people that speak with their noses, right? You have heard this before. There are people with nasal voices, right? Okay, so you can put imagine all these things that you're seeing here. There are different cavities of your body where your voice can resonate. Okay, so you have your nose. You have your head, which is a very small voice. You have your throat, which is where most people speak. And then you have your chest. Try to speak with the chest voice. It is a lower voice. It resonates more. And it's, in fact, more powerful because it's studied that people listen more to speakers with lower voices. People vote for politicians with lower voices. So try to, this is something that requires a little bit of training, okay? So get up again. I know you want this. I know you like that. Get up again. Okay. So the key to finding your chest voice is your diaphragm, okay? So your diaphragm is this thing that you can see here. Sorry, guys, there. It's this. It's a muscle that's here supporting your lungs. So you need to, breathe normally. Just breathe normally. Have deep breaths. Okay, have deep breaths. You see, some of you are feeling how your shoulders get a little bit up. You see that? You feel that? Well, that's because you're putting the air in your lungs. So, if you have to speak with your chest, you need to put your air lower than that. So instead of raising your shoulders, you should feel your tummy growing. Okay, so put your hands in your tummy. Breathe hard. Breathe hard. And feel how the air is flowing at your stomach, how the air is filling your stomach. You need to feel, and if you don't feel it, it's okay. Just practice and practice and practice until you feel it. If you watch a small child, you will see that they naturally breathe with their abdomen. So try to replicate that. Breathe with your abdomen. This serves several things. The first one is that, as a fact, you will speak with your chest voice. But the second one is that this relaxes you, and it helps you control your anxiety. So, again, let's try another exercise to try to understand how the abdomen works for supporting voice. So I'm going to ask you, let me explain the exercise first. So I'm going to ask you to inhale, and then I will count to 8. And you need to exhale like this. Okay? So very small exhale. I will count to 8. Try to be exhaling until I finish the count. Okay? So inhale. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Very good. Now I'm going to count to 10. Inhale. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10. Very good. It's getting complicated, right? 20. So, challenge yourself. Try to do this at home. Try to hold on as much as possible because this is training your diaphragm. And you will realize how controlling your breath can take you a long way. So you can sit down again. So remember these exercises. Because really, this is something that is very simple and that you can do at home. And that you will realize that when you breathe with your abdomen, your voice will naturally come out of your chest and it will go lower. And the good thing about that, and I can tell you, last night we spent like a good night, you know. We had some drinks. So I'm out of voice. My throat is completely sore. Are you sensing that? You know why? Because I'm talking from my chest, not from my throat. If I was spoken from my throat, you would hear my broken voice. You don't want that. So this is a way to actually be able to speak for hours and never getting tired, which is something that usually people with throat voices feel that they get tired because they speak too much, and that's because they speak with their throats. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about music, okay, and how music relates to voice when we are building storytelling. So this is a random music sheet that I just downloaded from the internet, and I'm going to to try to explain the different concepts. So the first one is prosody. Prosody is the melody in your voice. So you see that I highlighted how the melody flows and how the legato, this is called the legato, how the music is sung, okay? So it's the same when you're speaking. Use these techniques. Let me put you an example. You know, there are people that speak with a single tone all over the presentation. It's crazy, I cannot do it, I can't try it. Okay, so I will concentrate. So imagine that I'm speaking to you like this for the whole hour, you will be bored to death. And there are also another way to see prosody. You see that there are people who end everything as a question, even when it's not a question, even when it's a statement. This is really annoying. So use prosody in your own benefit. Ask questions. Make statements. You know, sing with your voice. Be natural. It comes again to the fact that be yourself. Be natural. Speak like you would do with a friend. And use this kind of flowing, because it makes people more aware of what you're saying. Next one is pace. So in music, when you are reading music, you are told how fast you need to go. So you have cantabile, you have allegro, allegretto. There are a lot of different things. When you're reading music, since you're performing, you need to read that and do it as they say. But when you're public speaking, you are the composer. So just use it to your advantage. I could be speaking really, really fast because I'm super excited in something. And I could be speaking very low, very slow, because I'm trying to make a point. And at the other extreme of that, there is silence. There is nothing wrong with silence. Musicians use it all the time. You don't need to fill it with ums or ahs or whatever thing you fill the silence with. Be comfortable with silence, because it really makes a difference in pace. Next one is volume. So I could be speaking super, super in low voice because I'm really excited about something. Or I could be whispering to you because I'm trying to tell you something that, you know, I'm trying to let you inside me. So I'm whispering. So it depends on what you need to say. Use the volume for that. And in music, it's interesting because you see this crescendo and diminuendo, which is these symbols. It means that you are slowly changing the volume in your voice. And when you sing, when you're a singer, you're told that the best way to sing is that if you're saying a sentence, you start in a lower voice, and then you go and make it a little bit higher, and then again you end up slow, because it's good for the ears. So you can replicate that, or you just can be aware of how volume works. So this is a very powerful tool as well, together with silence. Play with the different ways that you can project your voice. And this is the last time I will ask you to get up. Get up. Okay. So, it's really... Since this is a very important tool, it's very, very, very important that you warm it up, okay? So I told you about two exercises that I do. I always do those, the inhale, exhale, imagine your personal space getting bigger. That's the first one. No need to repeat it. Second one, the you already learned that. That's the second one. Let's go to the third one. So there are a lot of muscles in your face. You need to massage them. Do that. Okay, I'm the one being recorded, don't be shy. Okay, so just do this. I'm watching all of you, yeah, do this. Okay, warm it up, warm your muscles up. You know, all the nasal cavity, as I told you before, because it serves a purpose. Your throat, massage everything. This is especially important if it's first thing in the morning and if it's cold outside, because your muscles are numb. So be sure that you massage and you warm up physically your face, okay? First exercise. Second exercise, let's look for resonance, okay? So, inhale and say, okay. Okay, you should be feeling a little tingling in your lips. Are you feeling that? Yeah? If you're not, let's do it again. Put your voice in the front. If you're not feeling the tingling in your lips, it's because your voice is somewhere in the back. Put the voice in the front. Make sure that you're feeling, you know, like it's bubbling out. Okay? Are you all feeling like the voice is ready to get out? That's the point where you want your voice all over your presentation. You need to project your voice, even if you don't have a microphone, you need to project your voice to the last person standing. And you get this by doing this exercise. So if you are able to feel that in your lips, you're projecting your voice to the outside, okay? So let's finish that with, and then you say, I'm going to do it. My name is Esther. So do the same with your name. So inhale. Awesome. But don't be shy. You know, it's important that you feel your voice being powerful enough to reach it. Okay? So let's repeat, because you were shy when you said my name is. Okay. Again and repeat, I'm the one being recorded. Don't worry, no one's going to see you. So again. And awesome. Awesome. Okay, now don't sit down, there's more. Third exercise. Okay? We're going to wake up our lips. Okay, so let's do the like when we were children. So it's a okay, feel it. You should be even feeling a little bit of annoyance in the top of your head if you're doing it right. Okay? This is magic for your lips. This wakes up your lips perfectly. Okay? Next exercise. This exercise is designed to help you, again, wake up your lips, wake up your throat, and wake up your diaphragm. So it goes like this. You inhale, and then you say, then, ka, 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 and then, sh, sh, sh. Okay? The three with the same inhale. So, p, 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 ka, 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 sh, sh, sh. Once again. P, 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 ka, 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 sh, sh, sh. You feel it? For the last, the poo one, the poo, is designed for your lips. So you need to use your lips for that. The ka, it's designed for the back of your throat, and the shh, you will feel that your abdomen is working hard to bring out that shh, and that's the way you train your diaphragm for that. Okay, we're finishing, but not yet. The next exercise is also for your tongue. It's for you to vocalize better. So it's with you roll an R, and then you go up and down. So let me do that for you. Okay? Follow my lead. I always wanted to do this. Okay? Please, bear with me. Okay, so. Then you guys. Awesome. Awesome. So you can do this in the car. Again, don't do it in front of the audience. It's weird. But you can do this in your car when you're reaching the event venue. And the last one. Okay, we are finishing. The last one. It goes like this, and the target of this last exercise is to allow you to use the different types of registers that you have. So it starts very high with a falsetto, then it goes to head voice, then it goes to throat voice, then it goes to chest voice, then it goes to vocal fry, which is when you are so low that your vocal cords cannot emit noise. So it goes like this. You start with we, and you end up with oh. So it's a wee. That's it. I know it sounds stupid, but believe me, it's a powerful exercise. So let's do it, okay? Wee. Once again. Whee! Great. So that's the routine that I use for my voice warm-up. You may use this or other exercise, but please remember to warm up. You may sit down. Thank you very much for your cooperation. And we're done with the tips and tricks that I wanted to share with you. So do we have time for questions? No? 2 minutes? Okay, so one single question, maybe? No? You have my Twitter there, so you just can write me and contact me if you need something. Thank you very much.
Okay, so now I feel my voice is ready. Thank you, Esther, for the session. It was great. So now we have some time for coffee and for refreshment. So let's say 15 minutes to maximum 20 minutes in order to start on time for the next session. That is going to be the last one. And so that we can, after that, close the day and go back to the hotel.